From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of November 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us from his office in Windsor, Illinois, and AgMarket.net to discuss the cash grain situation. And we'll check the weather forecast, too, with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day, a penny and three quarters higher at 368.5. The March at 379, a penny and three quarters higher. In the May, 384 and a quarter, up one and a quarter. July, three quarters higher at $3.90. December at 394, down a quarter of a cent. January beans, 4 cents lower at 901. March at 915 and a quarter, down three and three quarters. In the May, 3.5 lower at 928.5. July futures, 3.5 lower at 940 and a quarter. And November beans, down 3.5 at 945 and a quarter. The bean oil, 51 cents lower, $30.69 bean meal for the day at $301 even, up $1.20. Wheat futures, July, soft red at 517 and three quarters, 5.5 lower. The hard red down 4 at $4.42 and three quarters. Live cattle futures finished the December up 2.5 at 119.32.5. The February on out were lower though, down 42.5 cents in that Feb at 125 and a nickel. November feeder cattle down 1.75 at 145.52.5 in January's, $1.47.5 lower at 142.60 for the afternoon. The lean hogs on the day finished the nearby contract at $60.65, up 20 cents. The February, 67.5 higher at 67.45. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is now about down about 16 points at 27,784 for the day. And the U.S. dollar is up 0.086 at 97.9. The gold futures at $1,463.10, down $10.20. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Todd.
So, how's weather in Waco first?
It's real nice. Actually, we're running the air conditioner a little bit today. As ridiculous as it sounds, I kind of mowed for the last time. We were pretty dry all summer. Then we got a batch of rain, and I just kind of trimmed up the yard, I guess, this morning, and picked up some tree limbs and that kind of stuff, getting ready for to leave this place for a while. We're getting ready to go down to the Rio Grande Valley to spend the next few months at.
Oh, it'll be fun to talk to you from there as well. I know you've been looking at the charts. Let's start with that today. What are you finding?
Well, if you look at the cash chart shows you altogether different picture when it comes to soybeans. I mean, soybeans have been slipping a little bit here, especially today. But when you look at the overall cash chart, you got to be generally positive with the overall trend. We're really not that far off our highs. I think the market's going to regroup in here and try to rally maybe into Christmas or something like that. I think we get some seasonally. It's not uncommon to have some weakness toward the end of harvest, and I guess we're kind of at that end, at least in soybeans. We still have some soybeans out there, but we've got a bigger problem probably in corn. And when you have a long, drawn-out harvest, kind of like what we're having, December corn seasonal, a lot of times you'll have kind of a bottom in the first week of October, and then you kind of rally, and then you come back, and you kind of test that low again when you're going into December deliveries. And I guess that's kind of what we're doing from a seasonal perspective or a technical perspective, is that we're weakening as we go into the December expiration month. My guess, the weakness is pretty well generated by better-than-expected yields. I think a lot of farmers are pretty happy with their yields compared to what they thought they were going to get maybe back in June and July. Also, it's that time of year that, a lot of cash flow needs are required here by December 1st. So I think this weakness that we have between now and December 1st, or between now and Thanksgiving, I guess, most of it will be pretty well out of the way by Thanksgiving, because this year Thanksgiving's very late. I guess it's about as late as you can get, because the next week we're right away into December. My guess is what little weakness we're seeing here is what we're going to get here as we go, finish out the month of November. Then I think the market is ready to try to stabilize and try to recover some in December. But, you know, it's just real hard to get a market to go up in December, because it's the holiday season and you get a lot of position squaring. Farmers have a decision to make whether or not they want income this year or next year and whatnot. So you kind of get into a kind of a mixed bag in December. But since we've been down here most of November, or kind of a steady type month, I think there's reason to believe that we might get some kind of recovery going into the end of the year.
Are you worried about demand for corn?
Always worried about demand. Because that's the driving force. And, you know, without demand, then we're overproducing. And that's basically where we've been at for the last couple of years. And this year has turned out to be a lot better crop than what everybody thought it would be, I guess, in June and July. But, you know, this is not new. I guess I've been here before. You know, if you're in this business long enough, what goes around comes around. And I'm a firm believer is what we're experiencing is somewhat similar to what we experienced in the 80s. We had the 70s. We had good profitable margins that increased world production worldwide, that cut demand for the U.S. Because I don't care what kind of trade policy you have. The foreign countries that produce the same thing as what we produce will always undercut us. They will always undercut the price, and then we become the residual supplier for the world. And therefore, our carryover kind of becomes the world carryover. So this is not new. I mean, it's new to a lot of young farmers that maybe just got started in the business in the mid-90s or the mid-2000s. But we've been here before, it's just going to take a while for us to kind of work it out. And then the other thing, you know, I may get criticized for saying this, but anytime you tinker with demand by forcing the market to do something, ultimately that comes back and haunts you. And I have a feeling we're experiencing some of that now with the Renewable Fuels Act. And that means that I'm not against the Renewable Fuels Act. I'm definitely in favor of using, you know, corn to make ethanol and blend with traditional gasoline. But when you get into economics and you force, you know, I'm old enough to remember the wage and price controls of the early 70s and how that screwed up demand curves. And anytime the government gets involved and forces demand one way or the other, ultimately that has a negative impact. It's just a matter of when that kind of occurs. And I think we're maybe experiencing some of that also. But our biggest problem is that we just know how to produce a big crop. And, you know, with today's seed genetics, and I guess with the weather pattern that we had this summer, I guess it gets pretty hard to kill a crop these days. If you can get it in the ground, you're going to have a crop. And I guess that's what we're experiencing here today. And we're, you know, we just got a lot of supply around to get rid of, and what we're waiting on now is maybe some kind of weather issue in the southern hemisphere, maybe some kind of trade deal that'll give us a short-term pickup in demand. But whatever the case is, we have a tendency to overproduce and we end up with larger supplies than what we really need. And with today's seed genetics, it's getting hard to kill a crop. And whereas back in the 80s and 90s, you could kill a crop because the genetics weren't as good. I think that's kind of where we're at. So we're back at the same old game, is the big producers that are highly efficient with the big yields. They're going to make money. If you're, you got marginal ground and you are not keeping up with the high technology on fertilizer programs and this kind of stuff, you're not getting the big yields, and you're probably struggling. And that's kind of been the game ever since I've been in agriculture, is the more efficient continue to grow and get bigger, and the less efficient basically move out of the business, and we just get less and less farmers as time goes on, and farm size is just getting bigger and bigger, and I don't really see no change in trend in that.
It is a high volume, low margin business. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I will say that on one of the comments that he made as it relates to ethanol and corn, you might visit the FarmDoc Daily website. I've not read this article, but I'm pretty sure that the article that Carl Zuloff posted there today from the Ohio State University takes some of this up, and you'll want to visit that. Speaking of which, while you're on that FarmDoc Daily website, up at the top, there's a rolling panel, and eventually you'll find there a link to the Illinois Farm Economic Summit's registration page. I think you ought to do that as well. Get yourself registered. I'll be on the road with the Ag Economist the week of December the 16th. We'll be in Mount Vernon, Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign. I'm sure your banker will be in those meetings. They've been going on for more than 20 years, and if you've not ever been to one of these, you should make sure that you get registered today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Scott Irwin, Gary Schnitke, Dale Latz, Jonathan Kappas, Nick Paulson, and Todd Hubbs will all be on the road that week of December the 16th, delivering information directly from the Ag Economist to you, and you can ask them questions during those half-day events. We'll finish up at the noon hour each and every day of that week with a meal, and it's all included in the $80 registration fee. Get yourself pre-registered now. Closing date on the registration, I believe, is the 9th day of December, so don't wait. You need to get going on that today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You know, AFS, or African swine fever, has devastated hog herds in Asia and Europe, and U.S. pork producers have been working pretty diligently to keep the disease out of this country. However, as you'll hear from my conversation with Lisa Becton, it is a national biosecurity issue, which requires everyone entering the United States to think about where they've been and what might be on their shoes or in their bags.
Any type of biosecurity and prevention we can do is critical. And those things at our borders, that Customs and Border Protection do every day, is so hugely important. And so the Beagle Brigade, that is really a first line of defense, they use those dogs to basically sniff luggage and sniff out illegally brought in products, both luggage and containers. And that is important because we've seen that in other countries. When people bring in infected products and they somehow end up into the pork supply or into pigs for food, those pigs can get then infected. And so that's one component. The other is just international traveler biosecurity. So when people come in, it's really important to declare that you've been to a country, so that way you can go into secondary screening, people can spray your shoes off. But in addition to that, we do have information and procedures that people can take if they have to go overseas and then come back to the United States. So having downtime from a farm, wearing clean shoes and clothing into the farm you come back to in the United States. If you know you're going to go to a market, you may even bring shoes that you can dispose of and not even bring back to the United States. All of those things come into play and really can help prevent bringing something back into the United States.
And because people are fearful of a disease, this disease does not transmit to the human.
Correct. African swine fever is a disease of pigs and pigs only. It's not a food safety concern. It's not a public health concern. And so we want to make sure that people understand that, that it cannot transmit to human beings.
I'd like to talk about some of the market-oriented functions that we're dealing with. So a great deal of angst and wonder about how long it takes to recover from ASF and what the process looks like to repopulate barns.
You know, and that's something that we're still learning on what that time frame is. The United States Department of Ag, their veterinary services are the ones that set the guidelines for what to do in the event of an African swine fever outbreak here in the States. So they have basically an ASF prep guide that outlines a lot of those things. But the other thing we're trying to do is work together with other partners. So with the Swine Health Information Center, they have a program in Vietnam that we're trying to learn how is it going to, you know, how quickly can they get rid of the disease? And the only way we can do that is if we look at countries that already have it. And so we're hopefully trying to get that information and incorporate that into our U.S. plans, but it's going to take some time.
Lisa Becton works for the National Pork Board as its Director of Swine Health Information and Research. She is a veterinarian. I caught up with her last week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. Turning our attention now to the weather forecast, Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us. We sure do appreciate that. A little gray, a little wet. Farmers want to get back in the field. Can you tell me about prospects over the next 5 to 7 days?
Well, the next 5 to 7 days don't look all that terrible as you head to the north. Areas along and north of Interstate 80 aren't going to see too much rain or snow over the next 5 days or so. To the south, though, we still have one more system to deal with. We'll see some light rain and snow exit the region today, but then the bigger story comes in Friday and Saturday, where we have a weak system that moves through. It's not going to produce a ton of rain, but around a tenth of an inch to 0.2 inches to the south of Interstate 80. And then totals really ramp up once you get south of Illinois and into parts of Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. But this area is already pretty well harvested, so it's a little late to be too concerned about that. The bigger thing, though, Todd, that we're a little concerned about is what happens next week. Starting on Tuesday and Wednesday, the first in a series of large systems are going to move through the central U.S. Each one of those will produce significant rain and snow across different areas. And the way it looks at the moment, the Corn Belt will be under the highest level of risk with each one of these systems, not only producing rain, but also some snow. So we have that Tuesday-Wednesday system to deal with, and then there'll be another one right behind it sometime between Thursday and Sunday, so 7 to 10 days out. And more than likely, temperatures will turn a lot colder after that, and then we'll start to see more systems move through. So we're moving back into that stormy pattern that we've been dealing with for well over a year.
Turn your attention to South America. Are they doing better there?
Well, they're still pretty dry if you look at it over the last 30 and 90-day periods. Now, it does look better than it did several weeks ago, and certainly better than it did a month ago. But the concern that we have is that the coverage of dryness at the moment is much higher than where it was in November of last year and 2 years ago. And so that tells us that we need a lot of rain in order to get our soil moisture levels back to a level that we'd like to see them at for healthy growth and development. Now, yields of corn and soybeans aren't overly impacted by November weather. It's still too early. It will be kind of like having a dry spell in May in the United States. You can always get out of that situation with a lot of rain in June and July. But that's kind of the story. We need to see a lot of rain show up in December and especially by early January, or we're going to start to have to talking about this dryness and drought situation that currently exists. There is quite a bit of rain on the way over the next 10 days, but you need to keep in mind that a lot of rain is pretty normal of the climate. So even though we have all these rains coming up, it's not going to be enough to eat away at some of these deficits that exist. The only exception to that would be in parts of Argentina, where the climate is a little bit drier and some of the heavier totals are coming up. But basically, we think that 2 weeks from now, when we're sitting here in December, we're going to be talking about how things have improved in Argentina and the dryness situation has somewhat stabilized, but that we're still going to be needing some pretty big rains in Brazil and Paraguay. And if those aren't showing up on the maps 2 to 4 weeks from now, then we're going to have to start thinking a little bit harder about it. So it's still a wait-and-see game, but certainly the stage is set for dryness to be a story next month.
Hey, thanks so much. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. Let's chat next week. We're all maybe 2 weeks from now. Have a great Thanksgiving.
I sure will, and I hope you and your family have a great one, too. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon here for the Closing Market Report. You can listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Find us as a podcast as well. Look in the Google Play Store, the Apple iTunes Store. Check out Spotify, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, even the NPR One app for the programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Well, this week, an Illinois Extension ag economist wrote on the Farm Doc Daily website that due to lower corn and soybean yields, 2019 farm incomes on Illinois grain farms are projected to decline more than $80,000, that from last year's levels. Well, the article, written by Gary Schnitke, starts by putting farm income in some historical perspective. He says since U.S. farm safety net policy was changed in the mid-1990s to allow producers to plant what they want by reacting to market signals, there have been three distinct income eras.
From 1996 to 2005, average income on Illinois farms averaged $55,000. From 2006 to 2013, when we had higher commodity prices because of ethanol growing demand and shortfall someplace else, we had $189,000 of income, much higher. And now, since 2014, we've averaged $79,000 of income.
With a lot of variability around that midpoint. This year's income, for instance, is within that range, but Schnitke adds way off of last year's net income for an Illinois grain farm.
So just to put some perspective on it, last year we had $147,000 of income, which was reasonably good for the period since 2013. MFP payments helped a lot. Obviously, MFP payments helped a lot. This year, we're probably looking at something below $50,000 on average for income per farm in 2019.
And lower yields are the primary cause of the lower income. Again, MFP payments help a lot.
Lower yields are the primary factor, and we would be in much worse shape without MFP payments this year. We would be negative income.
Again, Schnitke says if it were not for the Trump administration's MFP or market facilitation program payments, which have been made to farmers around the nation for lost access to the Chinese market, Illinois grain farms would have a negative income for the 2019 growing season. Just a quick reminder as we close out our time together to visit our website, willag.org, willag.org, and that I'll be on the road the week of December the 16th with the agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I for the annual Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I hope you can join us on Mount Vernon on the 16th and Tuesday in Springfield, Wednesday the 18th in Peoria, Thursday we'll be in DeKalb, and on Friday back here in Champaign at the iHotel. You can find all the details of the Illinois Farm Economic Summit Series registration on the Farm Doc Daily webpage at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Get yourself registered today. You have a good afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.